Thanks, Ken. Can you guys hear me okay? Good. Hey to everybody here in the room, as well as anybody that might be listening on the radio. I was just sitting here towards the end of Barb's sharing. And I have the most direct means to eternal bliss in front of me. And I was reading from page 50 and 51, and I couldn't help but notice how much it reflected what Reverend Gloria was sharing this morning, as well as everyone else watching in ourselves. How devoted we are to our aspiration or not. And we can find out, where our devotion lies by what it is we do, what it is we really value, what it is we really find ourselves doing in the course of any day. And I'm just going to read from the most direct means to eternal bliss for a moment, because it starts on page 50 by saying, what if your present desire for freedom were to become a million times more intense than it is now? Then there would not be time for all these games, detours, distractions, delays, and distortions. Then you would stop listening to teachers who are supposedly liberated, but who are not liberated. Then you would not pretend that thinking about spirituality is authentic spirituality. Then you would not pretend that an intellectual journey is a spiritual journey. Then the only means you would accept is the most direct means. Then you would be just like the man who is being held underwater, trying to rise up for air. He doesn't have time for discussion. He doesn't have time for games. He doesn't have time for false teachers. He doesn't have time for indirect methods. He doesn't have time for endless reading. He doesn't have time for television. He doesn't have time for projecting an imagined meaning onto the teachings. He doesn't have time for entertainment. He doesn't have time for pretending to want to be free. He doesn't have time for any dishonesty with himself. He doesn't have time for pretending he has risen to the surface. He doesn't have time for any debate or argument. The only thing he has time for is to focus all of his attention on rising to the surface. That is why the most important key is the intensity of the desire for freedom. The only problem an aspirant ever has is a desire for liberation that's too weak. And extremely intense desire for liberation will solve all the other problems. And then it goes on into chapter 5 to talk about the primary means to awaken that extremely intense desire for liberation. And that's to carefully examine the two choices every day, choice A and choice B. And choice A is to end the ego by dropping all these unnecessary activities to create the maximum amount of time every day to practice the most direct and rapid means to eternal bliss. And of course, choice B is being identified with a body subject to suffering, disease, death, violence, anger, fear, etc. And I'm going to stop with that particular reading piece of it to just share from my own personal experience this week. And as some of you may know or may not know, my husband works out of the house, so he is here a lot. And part of what he does is to watch the political scene, if you want to call it that. And so oftentimes I sit with him as well and take it in and watch myself for all the ways that the finger points out and sees the quote sins of sins in the world in general, sins in our current president, sins in the experiences that seem to be happening to, for instance, the children in Syria. Michael Langford, talks about how humans deceive, hurt, and cheat each other. How human suffering takes on just an ocean of ways in which that seems to happen, and how dearly I hold that in my heart, empathizing with the suffering sometimes, knowing full well that energy simply adds to it. Sitting in criticism of the seeming lying, cheating, and stealing that appears to be going on, seeing the cause as outside myself, at the same time recognizing on a world stage, on a massively outpictured way, the opportunity, as our lesson today says, the wonderful opportunity before me right now to know peace, even within the appearance. And today's thought of awakening says, if you are not at peace, there is a wonderful opportunity before you right now. Seize the opportunity. What obstacle to peace are you holding on to? What idea do you cling to that is causing you pain? And looking at that myself, at this grand, seemingly outpictured representation of humans deceiving, hurting, cheating, gassing, killing, misrepresenting. I could go on and on and on. The list, it seems endless. I can look at all that and notice the emotions that I feel as a result of any sort of belief in that as the truth of my real existence, because it is not. It is not. Yet, I would be dishonest to say that, for instance, when I watched a 60-minute piece on the president of Syria, supposedly poisoning his own people, and viewed the pictures, to say that there was not upset, to say that there was not extreme sadness, to say that I wasn't affected by that in a very deep feeling way would be a lie, because I was. And within that, the only grace for me it is to, in fact, remember the truth. Remember the truth. I'm in the world, but I'm not of the world. And neither this present picture before me is a very tempting, attempt to keep me stuck, really, keep me stuck in believing in fear, believing in violence, believing in hatred and attack, believing in retribution, believing in all those things that I see and say that I, you know, don't want to be like, don't want to emulate, don't want to be part of. And so it's still a really tricky place for me to be in those situations where there seems to be a lot of extreme things going on, very loud representations of human suffering and forms of violence, and remain seated firmly with true self, with my pure essence, with unaffected self. And so I just share that with you because that's how it is for me right now. Even as I'm told that choice A, the choice, you know, to end the ego by dropping all these unnecessary activities, like, you know, watching television, like, you know, whatever it is that is nonsense in your life that doesn't contribute one iota towards awakening to this true self, this perfect joy that I say I want so much, that I obviously don't, because I'm doing something else instead. That's the fact. That's the fact. And so I've had lots of opportunities this week to, and even taking I'm not going to say a stance, but having to discuss with my husband that I just didn't want to continue to discuss the same observation that I may have had yesterday. It's like I got it the first time, and the second time I'm deciding to repeat it, I'm stuck in judgment. I'm still really standing there in condemnation and seeing how different I am than that, how that's not me, how I'm better than, how it should be different, how that's wrong, you know, all of that. And so unless my intention and my desire is to be only love and to see it with a fresh perspective that does not come from the intellect or the examining of, you know, seeming facts or not facts, or, you know, fake news or true news or all of that, which is impossible as a premise at all. I'm fooling myself. I'm just fooling myself. And so my contemplation in regards to that thought of awakening from today, there was also a piece in NTI Mark 7. And I am going to get to experience your perfect soul, guys. But the part from Mark NTI that I wrote down, and these are direct words from that piece. Nothing a man does can make him unclean, for his cleanliness comes from within, beyond the unclean thoughts. If a man believes the unclean thoughts within his mind, he will act on them. And then I skipped to a little bit later in NTI Mark 7, where it said, if a man has a choice about his thoughts, these thoughts cannot be the essence of the man. For no man has a choice regarding his essence. And all of And that's the end of the pieces that I wrote down from NTI Mark 7. And in Michael Langford's The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, this primary means of awakening, the extremely intense desire for liberation, is to, in fact, come to know this essence as the true direct experience of myself. That's the whole point of choice A, to know that essence as my true self. So my reflection on that says, true thoughts reflect your essence, yet are still not the full sense of essence. And the full sense is like in quotes. So again, true thoughts reflect your essence, yet are still not the full sense of essence. Essence is thoughtless and senseless. Start with thought, though. Pay attention to what thought says, the emotion it carries, the attitude of thought, what it is promoting, who it is serving. Any of this observing of thought, emotions, feelings, or attitudes, beliefs, opinions, any of that should be enough to inform you of its source and intent. Essence in manifestation allows everything effortlessly. Pure essence is everything. There is nothing after that. Your thoughts are an after that. If you are aware of your thoughts, they can be observed and the wheat separated from the chaff. Keep only what serves essence. The cleanliness process is a tool. Keep your focus there and sweep your house clean until pure essence becomes known as non-choosable. And that was my reflection. So with that, I will go directly to experience your perfect soul. We have been reading from Ruby Nelson, which is chapter 6, and we've been in this section in chapter 6 for quite a while. It's actually a beautiful section. I just love it. And last week, we were going to, I'm going to go back to halfway down page 190. This particular piece is called The Supporting Attitudes. And we learned week previous that the attitudes are love, praise, and gratitude, the ascension attitudes. Our love, praise, and gratitude. And an easy way to remember that is, for those of us that are golfers in the group, is LPG, like the LPGA, love, praise, and gratitude. And it says if we incorporate those as a steady attitude into our way of life, it's saying here that there are also supporting attitudes. So we're going to read about those, that these will help us to awaken to the truth, our true self, our true being. We'll come to know that self in direct experience, not in just the intellectual, talking about it sort of a way. So, okay, the supporting attitudes. It will be most difficult to make love, praise, or gratitude a permanent quality if you fail to break the habit of judging by appearances. And I definitely would just shared with you guys that I noticed judging the appearance of especially the children that they were showing on the 60 Minutes piece on Syria, the poisoning. And just the horrific consequences of the inhalation of that gas. And the appearance of that was very upsetting, and I had a lot of judgment around that. There didn't, seem to be a loving what is, or even an acceptance of what is, or even an allowance of what is. I really wanted to just turn away and not see it at all. It is only by keeping your eyes single to the glory of my presence, the glory lying underneath appearances, that you are able to become familiar with the, quote, everlasting arms of Holy Spirit. And even to, read that particular piece, to know that there's a glory lying underneath the appearance of the child suffering, twitching from nerve gas. Even just to have an inkling that is the truth. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to know, even if it's just an inkling of knowing, that is the truth. Reality is, in fact, no suffering, no form, no nerve gas, no war, no appearances, no sadness. Yet those are also, as our lesson Thought of Awakening today says, if you're not at peace within all those things that I just said, there is still an opportunity before me right now with those very pictures, with those very appearances, for the grace to shine through. But I need to remember to not get sucked into what seems to be appearing. And sometimes in those particularly horrific instances where I'm maybe viewing, sometimes Regina will post with our Thoughts of Awakening a video that kind of reflects those same kinds of things. And many people comment how difficult that is to watch. It's not an uncommon thing for a human being to react in that way. Yet, leaning towards the belief that that is true is to lend strength to what is not true. And so again, it will be most difficult to make love, praise, or gratitude a permanent quality if you fail to break the habit of judging by appearances. It is only by keeping your eyes single to the glory of my presence, the glory lying underneath appearances, that you are able to become familiar with the everlasting arms of Holy Spirit. All the while, the web of appearances may be there to contend with. But let your troubled heart be still in the midst of this great storm. And I, like I said to you guys, I would be a liar to say that my heart has not been troubled by the goings on within the political, within our government. I would be a liar to say that I haven't had opinions about it, that I haven't made comments in regards to it, that I haven't had fear thoughts about it, that I haven't, signed petitions in support of impeachment, that I haven't in some way, a worldly way, taken action. At the same time, like Carrie says, I think we have all spoken about it to some extent, yes. And at least for me, as things amp up, almost so surreal some days. It's just almost so surreal some days. I just don't even know how to really comment anymore. I just don't. And so I'm going to leave it at that. So it goes on to say, if you keep looking at appearances and judging difficulties to be my will, it is the same as closing off the avenue through which I help you. So again, as long as my attention and really my desire to see what's going on as real, as having real effects, as giving it a label of good or bad, right or wrong, applying meaning to it, and then believing my meaning, all of that. I'm actually, each time I find myself engaged in that activity or holding conversation, for instance, with my husband and engaging in some sort of collusion of opinions or disagreement of opinions, I add to the mess. I simply am part of what I'm criticizing. And so one of the ways that Michael Langford says we learn to take responsibility for our own thinking and to give it over for, just let it go because it's absolutely meaningless, doesn't mean anything, is to, and this is a different approach than we normally hear, is to, in fact, see the ways that we are judging someone else. See the ways that we're condemning others. See ways that we're saying, I'm not like that, or I would never do that, or I can't believe what an ass he is, or I can't, see the ways that you're critical, that you name call. See the ways that you're prejudiced.
see the way and do that by seeing it in someone else first. You know, it's always easier to see it in somebody else. And we have the perfect actor on the biggest stage of all as a gift, wherein I can take responsibility for what I'm seeing. It's a piece of myself. I don't have to look away, but I can look within as I notice each piece of it that makes me cringe. I can see that as an opportunity. Ah, you know, here's something within myself that I despise. And rather than, you know, continuing with the judgment, not only externally, which, you know, means I'm judging internally as well, I can let it go. I just simply notice it. But don't close off the avenue completely. You know, if I'm stuck in a judgment and I'm not seeing that, I'm actually, you know, like engaged in it, completely engaged in it, unconscious, just going off. Maybe there will come that point where I'm like, oh, I see what I'm doing. And that is that opportunity to stop and see. And then that opens the avenue for healing. So that's what we're being asked to do, not only with, you know, today's lesson, those questions, what obstacles to peace are you holding on to? You know, what are you doing that seems to be, you know, what are you thinking? What are you believing right now? It's not what you're seeing external to yourself that's really upsetting you. It's the meaning that you're giving it, your judgment of it, that's making it everything it seems to be. So again, if you keep looking at appearances and judging difficulties to be my will, it's the same as closing off the avenue through which I help you. All appearances are abolished through increased understanding. And one of the wonderful things my husband has been doing with this political stuff is he's a voracious reader. And so he reads a very rounded sampling of all varying beliefs, not just what he thinks and what's in support of what he thinks, but what the opposite side thinks as well. And what, you know, the far left and the far right and the far out, you know, all of it. He's reading about all of it. And it increases, you know, his understanding of how, in fact, we can see things so completely differently and stay stuck in our bubbles, everybody justifying their color of bubble and where it floats to and when it pops, and then we blow through the wand again and watch those bubbles fly away and pop, and we keep making more and more bubbles until we understand that there's nothing in any of that bubbling. The reason they're popping as they do is they were never real to begin with. Those are the bubbles that close off the avenue through which the help is available. But if we open our mind to everyone's seeming perspective, there becomes, you know, this wholeness that we see beyond. You know, it's like we can see what perception does. It is that mechanism that only can only see from a limited viewpoint. It can never see the all of it. But if we look out at our brothers and sisters and just take in what is being shown without judgment, that's a piece of it all. And all the pieces fit together to make the whole of it. It's not the real picture, but it can reflect wholeness just by being open. Just by being open, even if it seems to be bad or upsetting or fearful. You know, denying that isn't helpful. Looking away and acting like it's not going on, you know, isn't helpful. You know, sweeping things under the rug, that's not helpful. We have to see all of it. So this is saying all appearances are abolished through increased understanding. When you accept the race belief regarding any situation, and again, Michael Langford told us to we could substitute human in the word for the word race. When you accept the human belief regarding any situation, the human belief. So that would be, you know, any opinion, any side, any belief about it, any prior knowledge of it, any past learning, anything we presently know about anything, period. That's a human belief. When you accept the human belief regarding any situation, failing to hunger for that increased understanding, you have erected a dam across the flow of truth. The hungry mind refuses to accept appearances. The obvious does not satisfy. And I mean, it's so true. The obvious. And in the very instance I was sharing with you guys about, you know, the seeming President Assad poisoning his own people. The obvious does not satisfy. I mean, my mind was in such a tizzy about, you know, trying to make some sense out of how could one human being even think to do this to another human being. You know, my mind was taking the obvious pictures and trying to satisfy some sort of, you know, repulsion within myself over what goes on, you know, all of that. And he's saying to us, the hungry mind refuses to accept appearances, refuses to accept appearances. And, you know, of course, the miracles tells us true empathy is to refuse to side with the suffering. And that doesn't mean we have no compassion. That doesn't mean we maybe extend ourselves in whatever way we're guided to do so in the world we seem to live in. That's not what I'm saying at all. We each have to ask, you know, how am I to see this? What am I to do? What am I to say? What miracles, you know, do I offer through the healing of my own mind? Because to empathize with the appearances is to lend belief to this obvious suffering, the obvious dissatisfaction that this appearance is presenting. It's not a joyful scene in any way. So why would I lend my strength to that by believing in its reality when here I'm being asked, if your mind is hungry for the truth, if you really want to know beyond this grim picture that you're looking at, refuse to accept this appearance. And let my will, my avenue, my way of looking have a clear space to dawn in that space in your mind that you're leaving open to a new possibility. And I mean, why would we not want that? I mean, if the obvious doesn't satisfy, then give me what's not obvious, what I do not know, please. This says 1,000 religious authorities could preach their doctrines of good and evil. And they, you know, and my comment is, and they do. And the truly hungry mind would listen and be hungrier than before. Seek and you will find has been the promise. But if you are not hungry, if you think you have already found, you will never reach your hand toward mine. And you know, I saw an example of that. My husband wanted to go to a Course in Miracles meeting here in the villages where we live. And it was not my I didn't feel that same guidance to go, but he asked that I join him, and so I agreed to be supportive. And there were was maybe about 20 or so people there. So four of which had no idea about A Course in Miracles, and to what degree the other people knew anything about it, I don't really know. And they were in a review of lessons that were like in the, you know, according to the calendar year. And so they were reading, I don't know, I think they read about 10 of these review lessons, and people were commenting, they were asking for comments. And so my husband was commenting at one point, and a gal seated a couple of chairs from us was crying. She was weeping. And it felt she was, and I don't know, this is simply my interpretation. She was upset by what was being shared. She was very unhappy. And she literally, as my husband was speaking, she got up and left the room. She had some sort of physical ailment, but she obviously was very upset, which upset other people in the room. And my husband was sharing from that space where, and this is just my recollection, where he was talking about the idea of how we're attached to our unhappy thoughts, to our unhappy experiences, how we drag those forth into our present day experience, even when it's not a present day experience. It's simply a memory that we've chosen to retain and relive in our mind over and over and over again, even though we hated it the first time, or it was very unpleasant with it for us the first time, or there was some sort of resistance to it the first time. And the more he shared about that idea, the more upset she got. And so his suggestion about, you know, asking ourselves, why do we value those memories, really triggered something within her. And as much as we say that we are there to seek and find truth, to be open to different ways of thinking about who we are and what we are, and to letting go all of the things that hurt us, what seems more precious sometimes are those very things. We cling to those ways in which we identify ourselves, our, you know, our past experiences, our how we were treated, our physical ailments, our handicaps, our all of those ways that we've boxed ourselves into belief in the human self as the truth of who we are, and showing up to a group like A Course in Miracles, just another one of those thousand religious authorities that can preach its doctrine of, you know, good and evil, or ego and Holy Spirit, and seemingly having truly hungry minds show up to listen, but the representation of or resistance to really listening shows up also. I would rather believe in my limits. I would rather believe in my sadness. I would rather give in to my sorrow. I would rather indulge my story. And that was a perfect demonstration of that. At the same time, it seemed to cause some dividing within the group for those people that know not to empathize with the sorrow, but yet have compassion and want to be truly helpful. It appeared one way. And for those that weren't quite at that level of understanding, it could appear to be callous. So it was one of those very interesting experiences. I'm sure that many of you in this room have also been in maybe situations where that has happened, where there are different levels of understanding. People are in whatever place they are, and it's not the same place. And so, you know, kind of tailoring the message is impossible. We can only come from where we are. I can only come from what's coming through me in my present understanding, and I cannot and then just let go of whatever appearance might reflect an understanding of what was said or a lack of understanding about what was said. That's not my job. My job is to give as is given me. And this says again, seek and you will find has been the promise. But if you are not hungry, if you think you have already found, You will never reach your hand toward mine. Perfection and truth are both acquired by filling your surface mind with emptiness. Then hungering, asking, and continuously seeking signs of my presence. And that is so, at least to me, so, so important. Perfection and truth are both acquired by filling your surface mind with emptiness. Then hungering, asking, and continuously seeking signs of my presence. Underneath the errant surface mind are the everlasting arms of your center of omniscience and perfection. Exercise the best judgment you can, contending with appearances. But let your thoughts and feelings continue to be focused on the everlasting perfection which lies beneath the web of human subcreation. As you form these renewed mental habits, As you form these renewed mental habits, replace worry and frustration with the glad song of the heart, you will at last be building on the mighty rock of faith. Let me read that last paragraph again. As you form these renewed mental habits, replacing worry and frustration with the glad song of the heart, you will at last be building on the mighty rock of faith. And that's the end. That's the end of that piece called The Supporting Attitudes. Yeah. So the thing that seemed most relevant for me was the idea of appearances, looking at appearances, contending with appearances. And within that seeming activity, continuing to seek the signs of presence, of truth. If I remember who I really am in whatever experience or whatever appearance seems to be before me. You know, exercising the best judgment means that I live upward. You know, I'm looking for those thoughts that serve beyond this seeming appearance. Living upward means I'm looking within myself no matter what the appearance might be. Remembering, is this a reflection of truth? Is this an opportunity to see differently? Is this an opportunity to ask? Is this an opportunity? What feeling am I having right now? Where is my focus? What is this voice saying? Is it true? What is this picture showing me? Is that true? Where is my focus right now? So again, it's telling me if I find myself in worry or frustration. Don't forget. Don't forget that hungering mind asks. You know, it might be an admission in your mind where you say, I notice what I'm seeing. I notice that it's not true. I notice it's upsetting me. So right now, here and now, in this moment, when I'm experiencing that, I'm going to ask. I might say, this appears to be real. This seems really big right now. This seems like an old mental charge or an old, strong emotion or feeling coming from, what I think about this. Who is this I that's thinking right now? What is this appearance about, really? Help me to see this differently. And let go of the worry. Let go of the frustration. Let go of the lie that appears before me. Once again, this distortion and distraction. And then it says, then with the glad song of the heart, you will at last be building on the mighty rock of faith, faith beyond the appearance. So I will end there. I'm at the bottom of page 192. Next week, we will be starting at the top of page 193. I appreciate you guys joining with me as I just contemplate on the fly. And have a blessed day. Thanks, guys.